Śrīmad-Jīvanā indicated he thought a nice way to spend our time is just questions and answers. So there's two ways to do this. One is take some paper and write down some questions, and the other is just ask questions.
Some of them are prepared.
Huh?
Some of them are already prepared.
Okay. So who would like to be the first to go with the question? Okay. Go ahead.
I just have a question. Apparently we tend to fall down because we don't listen to our intelligence, right?
Right.
How do we... So the intelligence always tells us, don't do that, you're going to... You know what's going to happen, always warns us, right?
Mm-hmm.
In a sense. How do we reach that intelligence? I mean...
So how we get better access?
Better access to it, so we can... have a connection with all the time.
Say negative or positive. Do the negative first. The in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes. He gives an answer to a question to Arjuna. Arjuna's question: why is it that we do things even against our own discrimination to do those things? It's as if engaged by some other force. And Krishna's answer is, it comes as a result of contact with the mode of passion. And by contact with the mode of passion, we're impelled. And after the mode of passion comes frustration. Oh, I did it again. Or, you know, we get burned. Ouch. And then anger after frustration. Anger and frustration after acts of passion. So the answer... then, from the negative side, is decrease passion and increase goodness, because goodness is the mode of nature where intelligence is operating. Passion is the mode where the senses are operating. I want da da da, and then whoa! It's such a loud, you know. The mind listens, and then off we go. So that's how do we increase the mode of goodness? Features, one of the good ways to increase goodness is regulation. You know that something that I learned as a teenager. Before I heard about Krishna consciousness. If there's something that's beneficial, best to do it regularly. Not, oh, you know, I feel like doing something that's beneficial. And then some time passes. Oh, that would be, hey, let me do it again. So something that's good, do it regularly. Regulation is a feature of goodness. And then you select things that are wholesome, and you do them regularly. It is because when you do something regularly, it becomes second nature. Prabhupada speaks like that. Practice brings... So my nature may be blank. Maybe, you know, something. I look out the window and I just start spacing out. Oh, I shouldn't look out the window because I'll start. So let me do something else instead. And you do that something else, you do that something else, and do that something else, and then it becomes second nature. It's easy to do the something else because practice becomes then second nature. The mode of goodness. Like, you know, making someplace clean. Here's one. You know, I travel a lot, so I have learned, as soon as I finish using something, it has to get put away. Because if I don't put it away, and I'm moving, likely I'll leave it behind. Or something like that. So it's a habit. So motive increasing, and there's other ways, increasing the motive goodness diminishes the motive passion, you know, the impelling urge to do something. You know, follow those urges, you do things that are wholesome and you do them regularly. Another is voluntarily, this is Prabhupada speaking in Los Angeles in 1968, where he was giving lectures, or 69, he was giving lectures on chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita, you know, Dhyan Yoga, meditation. So he was explaining how to be determined. So this is, you know, so how do we increase our determination? And then he answered, by voluntarily accepting austerity. Not like ridiculous austerity or something, you know, extreme, but specifically austerities that are scripturally based. And by observing austerity, the mind then controls the senses, and then it's practice, mind controlling the senses, eventually the senses become more controlled, the mind becomes stronger, the senses become more controlled. But what's behind the mind controlling the senses or accepting austerity? It's the intelligence. By exercising the intelligence in such a way that the mind becomes more determined by voluntarily accepting sense control, you've strengthened the intelligence. And then behind the mind, the intelligence is saying yes and it sticks. Not intelligence says yes and, boy, what happened? Something else happened. Because the intelligence wasn't so strong and the mind was stronger. And the senses were stronger than the mind. And off, you know, the soul goes, being carried in the chariot of the material energy. So, practice voluntarily accepting some austerities. And you would like some examples?
Yes.
First is the principle, then the example. Every month we observe Ekadasis. Coming up soon is Ekadasi. So when there's Ekadasi, there's two things. Increase hearing and chanting. And decreasing physical, you know, indulgences. Restraining the senses and increasing hearing and chanting. Because it's an auspicious day. So one might consider, okay, here's what I do every other day, now here comes Ekadasi, what are some austerities that I can do that are doable? And I can do it every Ekadasi. And then after doing it every Ekadasi, whoa, maybe I can, you know, regularly do a little something more every Ekadasi. And so it's strengthening, that's an austerity, that's strengthening determination. Increase, you know, instead of six, what are the number of rounds that you're chanting every day, I'm going to increase by something. And I'll decrease my bodily activity by something. You know, something that I used to observe complete fasting, even from water, every Ekadasi. And initially it was difficult, then eventually it was real easy. Because it just became used to it. Then my health went. I did something in India that was foolish.
So
I stopped that. Now I'm eating just one meal at midday, fasting in the morning. So simple. It doesn't diminish my activity. I can just like go and just. It's fine. I like it. Etc. You know, read something extra, chant something extra, memorize something extra, read a story from Krishna book every Ekadasi, or, you know, something. And then there are other, you know, appearance days. one devotee from Chicago, congregated, nice devotee, told me, you know, real happy the next morning. Gaur Purnima, I chanted 64 rounds. That's why I was late for class this morning, because I guess he slept in. Too much spirituality the day before. But, you know, he was obviously into it. I'm going to chant 64 rounds on Gaur Purnima. So that's nice. On appearance days, on Ekadasis, during Kartik month. You know what Kartik month is?
No.
Month of Damodar. We sing. Okay, so it comes in October, November period. It's the month, it's in a very auspicious month, commonly in ISKCON. In the evening, we sing prayers to Lord Damodar. Damodarasa come and offer a lamp. Okay, that's the whole month is the month of Damodar or Kartik month, and it's auspicious to take up some particular vow. Some people do this, some people do that. So, in authorized ways, not whimsical ones, think. So you know whatever are the other things that you might do. Let's say, I know that if I chant my rounds in the morning, they're much better if I chant them any other time in the day. So I'm going to do this little austerity. I'm going to go to bed at this o'clock and get up at that o'clock and do my chanting in the morning. Before I take my breakfast, I'll have completed such and such rounds. And then, stick to it. And that makes the senses more controlled, the mind stronger, and the intelligence. Now I can not only chant my rounds better rounds in the morning, but maybe, you know, I cannot yell at somebody when they, you know, do something stupid. You know, I can have more intelligence rather than urges. I can control anger or whatever it is. You know, act on the platform of intelligence instead of otherwise.
Is that the way that we can, because sometimes our mind tends to, even though, for example, you know that you shouldn't be doing something bad, but sometimes your mind tells you that, you can do it, you know, this time is okay, you know. I know it's bad, but you can do it just once. And sometimes there's
that's the mind.
It's not convincing you so good, this time is okay, you know, this time is really okay. This is not good, but this time is the perfect time you can do it. I guess you need access to the intelligence to that moment.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, practice. And it's real easy, that, you know, for something like that, you make an exception. Hey, didn't hurt. Then you make another exception, and then you make another exception, and the exception becomes the habit, and the habit becomes, you know, you're down the tube. It goes on like that. So, know where the brake pedal is and just, you know, hit the brake pedal. But, you know, withdrawing from asat, or the temporary, invest in sat. In those moments where the temptation is there and, you know, the mind is trying to trick you, immediately hit the brake pedal, but invest in something that you know is wholesome. It's going to elevate your consciousness. Don't linger and contemplate. You just, according to the Bhagavad Gita, by that contemplation, attachment for the thing develops. So don't even hover in that contemplation phase. Withdraw and invest. Withdraw consciousness from the temporary, invest inside, and immediately.
So what are you saying? There's no point in speculating about it. Just hit the brake and just...
Yeah, just don't dilly-dally. Lingering, loitering, It's Maya. Loitering is Maya. Well, it's a little, you know, in moderation. No harm. I'm not such a great devotee anyways. And moderation, you know, it's got to be realistic here. And, you know, whatever all the rationalizations that go on with the mind. Just withdraw, just don't allow contemplation. That's a lesson from Bhagavad Gita. Because boom, 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 boom. And it happens again and again. It's like guaranteed contemplating. There's a sequence of verses that describe it. Familiar? By contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops some attachment for them. When attachment develops, and then...
Yes, and then the whole process is born.
Intelligence is lost. And when intelligence is lost, one falls into the pool of the material energy. So don't let it get that far where intelligence is lost. Act on instruction.
But from what I understand, so pretty much there is no point to tell yourself, okay, I'm not gonna, I mean, I shouldn't be doing that, like, just try to, like, fight it on your own, that desire or whatever. You need to rely on the, on some type of activity in Krishna consciousness or something.
Well, okay, now I'm gonna go a little bit up here. So, I was speaking knowledge and practice.
Okay.
Now there's something higher. Really? What's that? And that's connection with instruction and connection with instructor. Like, I know, the strength of love is stronger than my own little struggle over here. Because there are persons, you know, my spiritual master, there are things that, besides I don't have any interest in doing, I'm not going to do because... It's against his instruction. I'm just not going to do it. I'm protected by my fidelity to my spiritual master. Now, if one doesn't have a spiritual master, that's something you don't have. It's a protection that you don't have. So all of us, not just because I'm his initiated disciple, but all of us are connected to Krishna through his instructions. We would know beings about Krishna without, you know, his Bhagavad Gita and the chanting and, every, you know, the temple and everything that's his gift. So, we owe something. We receive something. And there's a sense of, hopefully, a sense of gratitude in the heart, and that's a relationship. So I don't want to act outside of that relationship. And then others who I feel... they've helped me a lot in my spiritual life, and I don't want to do things that are behind their back, that, you know, it's just dumb. I don't want to do that. I don't want to betray that relationship. So it's protection beyond my own effort and strength and struggle and, you know, knowledge and conduct. It's a higher principle. It's a bhakti principle. And with bhakti, there's also knowledge and sense control. But it's a higher principle. There's greater strength in that. So I'm not, I submit, I have this mentality, I'm independent. And in my more alert moments, I realize, what is that independence? It's really silly. I'm bound in every moment by the laws of nature. I can't digest my food. I can't breathe. I can't do anything. I can't walk across the room without, you know, Krishna's help. I don't know how my food digests. It digests. And without my food digesting, I'm a goner. And whatever else I want to think about. You know, my existence is dependent. I'm not independent. It's really silly. I'm an American. I'm independent. I declared my independence. So I'm independent. And not only Americans, but everybody in the world thinks they're independent. But letting go of that, so I have, now it's a whole other paradigm. I have free will, and with my free will, I submit that free will to one, to a spiritual master, who can take me out of this embarrassing situation where I lose my intelligence and I do dumb things and I go, oh, there I go again, and how come I'm not strong enough to overcome that, and I do it again. And so I need this person, and the descending mercy of Krishna that comes through that person. I need strength beyond my own strength. One requires a spiritual master. That's, I mean, Bhagavad Gita teaching. It's not, that's for weaklings. That's for people who are intelligent. So I don't lose my intelligence with struggling with the material nature. There's a verse exactly like that in Bhagavad Gita. Devyeshu gunamaya mamaya dharatya. The struggle against the material energy is very difficult. But those who have taken shelter of Krishna can easily cross beyond it. Easily cross beyond it. The struggle is like zoom. So how does that surrender to Krishna come about? Through those who are agents of Krishna, representatives of Krishna, those that can, Krishna has given the power of attorney. Here, you can give me to whoever you like. And that's how he gets Krishna's shelter. Then it's not just our own strength anymore. That's bhakti. Now, let's go down a little bit. Supposing somebody says, oh, I don't want to, it's demeaning, I don't want to surrender. I want to, like, do it. So there's other systems of yoga for people who want to, I want to do it. And there's the, you know, mechanical yoga, dhyan, meditation, and so forth. So they're missing that extra, you know, the Krishna factor, I call it. Krishna's strength. And Krishna's strength is accessed through those who are dear to Krishna, Krishna says. One who claims to be my devotee, he's not my devotee. One who is the devotee of my devotee, that's my devotee. That's what Krishna says. He gives his mercy most to those who are intelligent. They realize, I'm not meant to do this on my own. That's what Krishna says, and that's what my experience says. So my intelligence says. Which is greater, A or B? My strength, or my strength plus Krishna's strength?
Krishna's strength.
Real easy. Real easy. So now how do I access that? Krishna says how to access that. So now my intelligence says yes. My false ego may say, well, wait a minute. Or my conditioning may say yes, and then my intelligence may say yes, and my conditioning may take me somewhere else. But I'm held to that position of strength by loyalty to a relationship. You know, thoughtful relationship, not just a blind following kind, a thoughtful kind. Here's a worthy person. I'm not so fit, but they're a worthy person unto whom, if I accept, repose this false sense of independence at their feet and ask them to please kindly pick me up, they have the wherewithal to do it. That's intelligence. Then it's not on your own anymore. Struggling.
So you need that help.
That's the higher position. Yeah. That's the higher position. That doesn't mean, okay, now I don't have to do some austerities, or I don't have to become situated in the quality of goodness. You get strength to do those things better than just on your own.
So you need to train yourself before you get to that position, right?
Well, you need both. It's effort and mercy, both.
Yeah, definitely mercy. That's without a doubt.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly train yourself, but submit to being trained. Mm-hmm. And that means, okay, now I know I should rise early in the morning because the teachings say to do that. My practical experience says that's best. And even though my mind may go, well, you know, a little splurge over here and over there, with, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stay regulated. Or something. Whatever the indulgence thing is. Eat something, drink something, do something, speak something, you know, dumb. Then you regret it. So stay protected under instructions. There's discipline, there's effort, and there's mercy. Okay, so one down and three to go. You have something?
Yes. My question is pertaining to japa.
Okay.
Chanting. Why do we have such a stress on rounds that we do?
Numerical?
Yeah. Well, my understanding is that if we chant one Hare Krishna Maha Mantra with rapt attention, our full heart, our full absorption, that is perfection.
That's right.
Maha Mantra.
That's right.
So if we're so concentrating on, oh, I've only done 12 rounds, you know, I'm ready for bed, this, you know, if we're work, you know, so tied up in what we need to do otherwise, then we're, okay, I got to get through these. And, all right, sorry, because you're going to get through it so quick because we want to reach that number.
Yeah.
Or even when we get to our number, then just stop there. When I could be, wow, why would I stop?
Good point.
Chanting until the sun sets.
These are all good points. So why numerical? I could think of like six or seven things. If we were on the platform of Shukadeva Goswami, we wouldn't need numerical strength, but we're not. So, therefore, it's the numerical strength is there because we don't have that ability to chant one. There was a morning walk conversation in Nairobi, Kenya, where Prabhupada was asked by one, there was like a group walking, and it's recorded. And Prabhupada, how do we know if we're chanting good rounds? And Prabhupada said, there's no question, you must. And so the conversation went on, and then the devotee asked the question again, and Prabhupada gave the same answer. So Brahmananda was with Prabhupada, and he said, no, Prabhupada, he wants to know, we know that we must, but how do we know if we're chanting quality rounds, good rounds? And Prabhupada gave basically the same answer and then explained. He said, when there's quality, there's no question of not knowing. There's no question of 16 rounds. But because there isn't quality, therefore you must. But when there's quality, then why 16 rounds? Why not 16 million rounds? The tongue simply wants to chant the name of Krishna again and again and again. No question of 16 rounds. That's quality chanting. So back to, you know, why numerical? Because we're not at that stage of quality. So it's numerical. Now, another one. You know from your experience, you just shared it, chanting at night when you're tired after work is not quality. I mean, it's less than the other kind of quality. So the best for approaching quality, numerical or not, is as mentioned early in the morning. That's best. Scripture says it, experience tells us. Best. So adjust your schedule so that you're not chanting after work, but you're doing other things after work and take rest by such and such time so you can get up at such and such time so you can chant early in the morning. And when you chant early in the morning, besides the quality is better, it's easy to, much easier to monitor the quantity. You chant more efficiently, more effectively, more qualitatively, and it's, now it's completed. So that at the end of the day, when you're tired, you can, because you got up early enough to do that chanting, you're like tired, so that you'll rest rather than continue to stay up. No, boom. Take rest. In such a time you can get up early, and I mean, the same amount of hours. But even according to studies, resting early, rising early, it's better quality rest. What to speak of better quality job. It's much better. It's like this, that's intelligence. Why don't we do what's intelligent? Well, because the modes of nature are pushing us. So what's the antidote to the modes of nature pushing you? Regulate yourself according to the mode of goodness. Early to bed, early to rise. Mode of goodness. That's the second thing. So that way, numerical with better quality rather than numerical with regret, because it was like gobbledygook. A third thing Prabhupada would speak about in answer to this question, it's a vow. And there's strength in a vow. So whatever one's vow is, it may be 2 rounds, maybe 4 rounds, it may be 8 rounds, whatever it is, maybe 16 rounds, make a vow and stick to it. Don't quote, you can go more than that, but don't do less than that. That's numerical. Another answer is Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about, he uses the term numerical strength. And similar to him, Bhaktisiddhanta, his son, wrote about as Haridas Thakur chanted those many rounds, those who aren't chanting those many rounds, 3 lakhs of rounds a day, the 3 lakhs of names, then there's increments of 4, and then 8, and then 12, and then 16, and then like that, increments of 4, is common. It's not like a mandatory thing, but it's common amongst Vaishnavas, because there's a certain number of names within 4, and within 8, and within... That's why Haridas Thakur chanted the number that he chanted. It's numerical strength. Here's another one. And that is, consistently, our acharyas describe that to overcome offenses, so let's say, you know, blaspheming devotees of the Lord. So one may make that mistake, like, you know, lose it in some interaction with a devotee. So the antidote, there's two. One is serve that devotee and go and make amends with that devotee. Ask for forgiveness from that devotee. And so then our acharyas say, supposing that devotee doesn't give forgiveness for whatever the reason, then you go back again later and again request, and they go back again, and if it still doesn't happen, then constantly chant. The numerical strength. And each one of the 10 offenses has that antidote. It's like, it's an antidote to offense is numerical chanting. It helps to reduce offense. Now, the context that your question was presented is, what if it's late at night and we haven't completed our rounds and we're trying to, you know, chant in a hurried manner and it's not nice? The answer to that is, fix the problem by the mode of goodness, not by whining and complaining. Oh, why numerical chanting? Just do it properly with the mode of goodness solution. There's probably some others, but they're not coming to my mind right now. It's there. We should take a numerical quantity that we can maintain. Especially in the beginning, if 16 is whoa, but some number that I can maintain and then maintain it. It helps me establish goodness by doing something regularly rather than today this and tomorrow that, and tomorrow it's nothing and then it's a whole lot and then it's numerical strength. It'll help me become situated more in the mode of goodness and approaching more effectively transcendence. So best to avoid the misapplication of the principle. Don't throw out the principle because of misapplication of the principle. Accept the principle with proper application. Okay, Shravan, you're next.
Yes, Maharaj. Maharaj, living in the temple as compared to living outside after 2 years, it's more positive against
you've the been here for 2 years. We took a little break, right? You went to
45 days, but still it was
okay.
In front of the temple.
Okay.
It's wonderful against the material modes are outside rather compared inside, more shelter. Islam more shelter.
No comparison.
No comparison. Thank you for allowing me to stay masked. Since in the temple there is day-to-day services, day-to-day interactions, and there is little friction because of my own dirt inside, because of my samskaras. So the mind bars for some time while you're staying here. It tries to shut down all the things what I'm doing for a certain period. Let's say if it happened in the noon today, till in the morning it bothers me. And then I get to realize, oh, this is the arrangement of Krishna teaching me something. But that duration is taking a little long. 1 day or 1 hour it is taking to come neutralize if something happens. How to get it to the track very soon rather thinking into that first.
Same question he's asking, just the context. The way that you've asked the question is different, but it's the same question. How to stay on the platform of intelligence instead of listening to the whining and complaining of the mind. Mm-hmm. Same question. It's just expressed differently, the same answer. Okay.
Increase more like silence.
Yeah, you listen to the answer, and I don't want to have to repeat it again.
My question is about initiation. Like, how would one know or feel that they're ready to become initiated?
Okay.
Should one feel in that way, or should it be internally?
What was the last part? Or should one?
Or should it even? Of course, one should feel they want to get initiated, but is there a certain feeling one should have, or is that just like romanticism?
There's not a rule for something like this. There's like a big range, like big range of, you know, what's appropriate. Something that I feel that's important about the answer to your question is probably above what you're thinking, but my thought is when someone, once they're initiated, they become officially, before it's unofficially, and then it's officially, they're representing the disciplic succession. Whatever, you know, their initiated name is, they're now an initiated member of the disciplic succession. And so they have the responsibility to represent disciplic succession And it's an awesome disciplic succession to represent. Whoa, what's my qualification? So there may be some interest from a spiritual growth perspective that if I receive this very good fortune of receiving initiation, it will help me. Now that's like from my side. But then there's like, on behalf of, I need to be able to represent the disciplic succession by my speech, by my conduct, by my qualities. That's a big responsibility. Now, some people may not know that this person is an initiated devotee. I mean, I don't know if the people at his workplace know he's an initiated devotee. But he knows he's an initiated devotee, and Krishna knows he's an initiated devotee, and it's part of, in a formal way, it's now part of his responsibility in the workplace, where people may or may not know whatever they may or may not know, to represent disciplic succession, to have the qualities and the speech and the conduct and the, you know, the sensitivities of interacting with people, where people, if they don't know, they can go, you know, wow, whatever this person is up to is it's something good, kind of intuitive sense of, and that's what the responsibility of being initiated is. So I like to think of when in terms of being able to fulfill a responsibility. So that, and it means that then there's some subsets of those things, like, you know, a deep sense of commitment, a deep sense of conviction, something that Prabhupada has said about initiations, when there's, where there's no longer any doubts. So his statement is, prior to initiation, one may have some doubt, and that's okay. And then you raise the doubt, and you get your doubts cleared before initiation, not like after initiation. Wait a minute, I've got this doubt. So it should be, you know, it's on the platform of intelligence. You know, the mind may go yada yada yada, and the intelligence says, shh. Sit down. here's the real picture. Now, you know, you're used to being in charge, but I'm telling you, you didn't do a good job. You made big messes again and again, so I'm just not going to, like, you know, sit down. Krishna's in charge this time around, and that's it. So, you know, with conviction, it doesn't mean I'll never have a silly thought in my mind ever again. And that's the prior condition to initiation. But, you know, there's conviction and there's commitment, and, you know, a reasonable grasp of what Krishna's teachings are in Bhagavad Gita. Not like you have to take a Bhagavad Gita exam, but it's more a basic faith. You have an understanding of what the teachings are, basic faith in the teachings, and they guide you. And you're to represent them. And, you know, the disciplic succession, and more specifically, one spiritual master, there's more expected of someone that's initiated than someone that's not initiated. I need to qualify myself for that before I start representing this group of people, the saintly people who have kindly extended their mercy into my life. So what I'm saying, it's another way of saying the same thing, but what I'm saying is, it's more about preparing than it is like getting something, getting initiated, qualifying myself. And just take a phrase from Prabhupada, you know, he would say, be a strict follower or a loyal follower, like that. So when that sense of commitment and loyalty is there, there's a whole lot of protection. You know, the sending kind of protection and the internal kind of protection. The internal kind of protection that says, I'm not even going to entertain that stuff. I'm not attracted to it anymore. And even those things that I like, you know, occasionally some... that's protection. I'm a protected person, protected beyond my own strength, kind of thing, as I've mentioned before. And now I'm not going to embarrass the disciplic succession or myself. With some degree of reasonable certainty, you know, from an internal conviction and commitment, both. Certainly some kind of relationship with a person or persons, Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru, Guru's person. We were speaking about that this morning in class. And so, you know, I have my resources that Krishna has kindly presented in my life, and there, that respect and regard and sense of gratitude is quite strong. That's from my side. And then the descending mercy is coming from the other side. So, relationship that also gives protection. Then, I'm ready. Just like one more time. It's more about qualifying and preparing myself than it is getting something or attaining a stage where the bell rings. Now I'm ready to be initiated. Mm-hmm. It's more dynamic and organic and, you know, from the heart. Go ahead.
In terms of qualification, you say you should have conviction. Where can one draw the line between, like, conviction and suppression of, like, thoughts or actions?
Well, it's a little bit like his question about intelligence. Supposing, I grew up in America, and because I grew up in America, you know, I was, you know, all the media things that the people that grow up in America are exposed to, and all those awful impressions of those awful things that media exposed me to dance around in my mind every now and then. We call this in ISKCON impure reminiscence. So, am I not eligible because those impressions dance around in my mind every now and then? So there's that contamination. That's not an ineligibility. It depends on whether you continue to contemplate them. Oh, that was a nice one. Oh, I remember that one. And, you know, all of those things. So if there's indulgence, then that's not a good sign. If there is, the appearance is not the disqualifier. It's what do you do when those impure reminiscence things come into the mind. You know what to do, and you do what you know. It's intelligence. You know what you're to do. You withdraw the mind from that. You tolerate it. It says the price I have to pay for being stupid and growing up in America, and it's not just America. It's all over the world. But, you know, so, and I'm going to do this, and you just go and do this. And it's just like, that's a qualified person. That you know, exactly what Krishna says, the devotee is then doing what Krishna says. There may be some mess up, but consistently, that's what one does. And, you know, because of the mood of service, I like service much better than, I like reading Prabhupada's books, and I like going on Harinam, and I like. And so that's far more attractive to me than those other things. I'm not missing out on anything. I'm much happier than I was with those other. So that's the contentment and beyond doubt. Does that help? Do we have some time? Well, we're at 6 minutes over time, but I'll take one question. Go ahead.
Yeah. I must say, this my Supreme Personality of Godhead.
What?
So, this my Supreme Personality, Supreme Personality.
Okay.
And, but the prayers that we do, Mangalaharti, so it's almost for the Guru we are doing it.
Not almost, it is.
It's for the Guru.
Yeah.
And even for after that, Guru Vandana that we do, and it's also for Guru. So,
why?
So what is the prayer that we are doing for Krishna? So I don't find that in that kind of thing.
I beg your pardon.
Except chanting, I don't see.
Okay, except for chanting.
And
kirtan and Jairada Madhava and so many other bhajans. Now, are you complaining or are you asking?
No, I'm not able to justify myself. So
okay.
We are doing only for Guru.
Did you attend class this morning?
Yeah.
Okay. The answer is in class this morning. Remember? What Prithu Maharaj said to the four Kumaras? I see you like Narayana. And then you say, well, you know, how come it's just about Guru? Well, you know, read the verse in purport. Just step back and say, Prabhupada was given some service. What was that? Take the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the English-speaking parts of the world and deliver it. Take the message of Lord Chaitanya. And he came here and he saw what he wrote in that nice poem, the prayer to Krishna in the Jaladutta at Boston Harbor. You know which one I'm referring to. Yes?
No?
It's in the songbook, you can find it. Mm-hmm. And it's you know, in Western vernacular, it's, oh my God. How is this going to be possible? These people are steeped in the lower modes of nature. How are they going to understand the message of transcendence? And then he quotes from the Bhagavatam where those who are in the lower modes of nature can be brought to transcendence. But so it's to access Krishna, but how to access Krishna for people who are so much in the modes of nature? So there's kirtan, there's prasadam, and faith in Guru. So the early devotees didn't know Krishna from a hole in the wall, but they knew Prabhupada. And through Prabhupada, they got Krishna. And same today. You're not, you know, a young Western counterculture person. But it's the same principle that through Krishna, through the spiritual master, one gets Krishna. And one must see, read the purport again from this morning class. One must see the spiritual master. It's right in Nectar Devotion. As the representative of Krishna. There's a whole chapter about it. It's a must, not optional. So, see in that Guru Vandana and so forth, you know, this is, we're approaching the current link so that we can get to Krishna. Without that link, I'm not going to get to Krishna.
If that's the case, suppose if you meet any outside people other than Muslim, how this is different than a Sai Baba kind of thing? Because they also do the Guru. Puja.
Oh, this! My goodness! I'm shocked that you're asking that question.
Guru Puja kind of thing. So, you know, I'm asking if we meet any outside people, how can we answer to that?
You know the answer, and I'm shocked that you're asking the question. But I'll answer the question after exhibiting my surprise. Because of the teaching of Rupa Goswami, which is in Nectar of Devotion, we are to see the spiritual master as exactly as the purport said this morning, as the confidential representative of the personality of Godhead. Because he's carrying love for the personality of Godhead within his heart. He's carrying the personality of Godhead within his heart. Because the personality of Godhead is attracted by his love. And so we're respecting him as respect is due. Not he's God. Now, we'll go to the other group that you just referred to. He's God. He's not representative of God, an intimate servant carrying the message of God. It's another story. I am Krishna, I am Rama, I am God. Worship me. I mean, he may not say it, but his followers say it, and he just is nodding his head. So, it's absolutely night and day difference. Although externally it may look, as you say, it may look the same. Let's take so many other things in devotional service. So many other things. Let's just take prasadam. After our program, we go into the prasadam hall, we sit down and take prasadam. Any other organization, they have their gathering and they go and serve refreshments or a meal. Looks the same. It's a world of difference. What's the world of difference? To offer to Krishna. So when that respect is offered to the spiritual master, where does it go? It goes through the cyclic succession to Krishna. Why? Because he's understanding his position is the representative of Krishna. This isn't meant for me. It's meant for Krishna. And if one who thinks it's meant for me, he's fool number one. He'll fall down and his followers will similarly. That's the difference. Night and day. It's not even close. Night and day are not close.
I got it.
Okay?
That's why they keep the statue in the altar, big statue of Baba and Buddha instead of Dr. Krishna.
How strongly did Prabhupada speak against impersonalism? And that's impersonalism. Without carrying on any further about that. Can we end on a different note besides that one? Anyone else?
I have one comment.
One more?
Yeah, that's okay. A comment.
Last one. Last one. It's 3:40.
Inspired by a segment of your class last night.
Okay.
This morning, I had the thought that if you ever had some free time, you could write a song and call it Nityananda Broke the Danda.
Nityananda Broke the Danda. It's a nice pastime. A nice pastime. You've inspired me. I'm going to explore commentaries by our acharyas and see if I can find commentaries on that pastime. And tomorrow, isn't it? Tomorrow evening is another Gaura Leela. Yeah, home program. So tomorrow evening, if Krishna gives me the memory to do this, then I'll speak, you know, what our acharya said about that pastime. It's just like, you know, a little part. I'll try to remember too.
Marshall, what is the housewarming program?
So huh?
The housewarming program?
We're going to burn the house down. That's tomorrow? And then Lal Gopal is Tuesday?
Yes.
Okay, so Tuesday. Gives me 2 days to get it together. Okay, thank you very much for your time. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much.